Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Good morning and compliments of the season to you, Rod Oram.
Good morning, Mike, and the compliments for the season to you too.
we weighed in first with the new green fund launched by the government to the sound of $100 million. Is that a lot of money for a green fund? Is it not enough money for a green fund? And do we need a green fund?
First of all, we need a green fund because technology is changing really, really fast around those sustainability issues. And secondly, this is still a difficult area of investment in terms of how you pick technologies, and because the technology is changing so fast, so many new ones coming along. So $100 million is a good place to start. And there's a lot of work for the newly created fund to work out how it's going to do that, because there will be some characteristics of this fund which should be separate and quite different from a normal government investment fund, although good practice and common sense needs to prevail, of course. But then the big question is it enough? In one sense, the answer is no, because there is so much to invest in. And I'll give you an example. The news broke last week about this mooted, huge $3 billion plant in Taranaki, which would generate electricity, which would produce hydrogen, which could be used to fuel vehicles, and then also produce urea, a nitrogen fertilizer.
Yeah, yeah.
So the question is, does the government get involved in a $3 billion project like that? Some of the crucial technology is new and still being proven. I'm funnily enough, happen to be exploring that subject in my column this week. So come Sunday morning on Newsroom, if I may give the plug.
Yeah, please do.
I might have a few more answers on that. But no, this is a good start. But as the Productivity Commission said, we've got to reorient our whole innovation system around these challenges.
You mean specifically the greening up and the climate change as a result?
Absolutely.
Of that's what I was going to say. It's becoming painfully painfully obvious that there is no. There is no threshold. We just have to do and I think this is worldwide, we have to do everything as quickly and as efficiently as we can. I think that we don't actually have a second to dither.
No, we don't. Yeah. And so we've got to make sure ultimately that everything we do works with nature, not against it. So no more degrading the environment.
It's going to be so embarrassing. Rod, imagine if we bugger it all up.
That's one can have a lively imagination, but it's a bit disheartening.
How shameful!
Keep hope we can make the change.
I think we can. I think that it's a matter of I think there was a real horrible period there where there was a lot of countries that didn't care, and I think those countries now are really seeing the results of their own neglect. You know, but anyway, carrying on. So $100 million would kick this off anyway. It's the sort of thing too. It would be hard pressed if you were a new government, in the next election, the coalition is ousted, and let's say Simon Bridges becomes the Prime Minister, and the National Party become the ruling party. Let's just say that, you're not going to shut a fund like that down, are you? That's going to keep on going. That's going to be an ongoing sort of entity. Is that right?
It would be a bit like climate denying, because I think there'd be another way of doing it. It would be saying, oh, well, look, we can just handle this in the normal system. We don't need a special fund. My worry about National is that it hasn't fundamentally changed its views on these issues. It was very obstructionist in the 9 years of the Key government. I mean, it trashed the emissions trading scheme, for example,
yeah.
And was very cavalier about the whole stuff. The big test coming up is whether it will support the zero carbon bill next year, which is fundamentally important as a piece of legislation to guide us on all this, but it absolutely has to be cross-party. It has to be every party in the House sign up, as has happened in 22 other jurisdictions, starting with the UK over 10 years ago. And I'm just not convinced that National actually is getting serious about these things at all.
So the reason they wouldn't be, if they weren't, would be because of the pressure from certain parts of industry, would that be right? And then, so, and the, you know, the sort of, I don't say denial, but the, you know.
Oh, look, there is denial. It's just the deniers, most of them realise that they're not very popular.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to ask. I was going to ask, like, and compared to say seven or 8 years ago, those particular groups of business, or that particular part of New Zealand business landscape, are they as powerful or are as committed to protecting, to giving themselves that option as they were back then? Because it's just not cool. It doesn't. I'm trying to get around this in a weird way. But I did the Sustainable Business Awards once. And it was fascinating. And all I could think was, this might not be the whole, all these different amazing ideas people had and changes to the way they were doing things. And I just couldn't. All I could think of was, this is the only. There's no other way of doing this. It's going to happen. You can, and all you can do is either attend to it slowly or attend to it promptly.
Well, to give an example of how things are changing, which is what National is missing, in the Sustainable Business Network Awards this year, there were 700 of us in Shed 10. Declaration of interest, I was chief judge in the
award. Oh, that's handy,
That's right. But the supreme winner was the City Rail Link project, not because it's public transport, but because of the very powerful environmental disciplines that they've brought into that project. And applying to all the contractors. So, for example, they've tried to minimise diesel-run compressors and other machinery.
Yeah, Phil Goss talked to us about that.
And the other example is that there's the Climate Leaders Coalition, which is now up to 31 CEOs of major companies, representing more than 60% of New Zealand's greenhouse gas emissions. Now, there are some in there that are only paying lip service to it, like Fonterra. They're all right on energy, but that's only 10% of their emissions. They're not all right on the other 90%, which is the animals. But that's probably unique. I'm sorry to be vague on that.
That's a perfect example, though. That's like if you're saying that there's 90% that they've got to work on, there's no way they're not going. They're going to have to do that. They're just going to have to do it because for the sake of climate change itself, obviously, but also because public perception of the company will plummet if they don't.
And because their competitors are. Which is why, come the next election, if National carried on the way it is and business becomes even more committed to this, you would start to see National losing the business vote. Now, you saw this in the last election. There was the most fascinating mood of the boardroom survey in the Herald shortly before the election, which showed that the matters that were top of mind were most important to the boardrooms of major companies had almost come up literally from the bottom of the list 3 years before. Wow. It was things like productivity and inequality and homelessness. That was a very profound shift in how boardrooms are thinking. And again, National is out of touch with that. But the thing I've noticed is that although you talk to business leaders and they say, yes, we're really onto these things, and I say to them, well, have you actually talked to National Party? Well, no, we're sort of, and they're just not giving the message. And I keep saying to business, look,
they're not giving them the message or not getting the message. Did you say?
No, business has got the message.
Yeah,
but it's still sort of talking, sort of mumbling to the National Party rather than being clear and direct with them about these very profound shifts, how their own thinking is shifting, and how they need a government, regardless of the political party, that is in tune with this. And National isn't. And so I keep saying to these business leaders, come on, guys, that's a non-gender-specific term because there are women there too.
Come on, Kiwis.
But look, you've got to be very clear to the National Party, because otherwise you won't get a zero carbon bill, or not one that's effective. And therefore, you are in deep trouble because you won't get the policy certainty and the long-term framework you need to be able to operate successfully in this.
Yeah, to get some sort of idea about how it's all going to pan out in the immediate future. Yeah, right.
So I think we're at an incredibly interesting stage on all these issues anyway, but we're certainly in an interesting stage on it politically. And Bridges was hopeless as energy minister and transport minister. I just got so tired of him turning up
I've really been enjoying people using the word hopeless in the last couple of days for some reason. Yeah. I've just noticed it. Hopeless really drives it home. You know?
I got so tired of being in public meetings where he was coming along as minister to, because he was the minister of the subject under discussion, and he would sort of wander in and you know, more than a few times, it seemed to me it was rare that he actually did stick to the script. There would be a prepared comments because, you know, something was being announced, but he'd just sort of airily toss it aside and say, well, you could look it on the website, and then ramble on. I got so tired of him talking about how fabulous electric cars are, I've just got one. Well, that's not policy that gets us towards a lot of electric cars. And the minister he reminded me of most was Shane Jones, because Shane Jones in...
I can totally see that, actually.
Yeah, yeah, because Jones would do exactly the same, and John Tamahiri too.
There's an element of... that's all right, we've got it covered. You just go back to what you were doing.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah. And they try to survive on what they believe is their sense of humour and, you know, and their approachableness and all the rest. And
I'm sure they'd say charm.
Well, they might.
Sure that, yeah.
But charm doesn't work on all people. And
one man's charm is another man's oiliness, you know? It's like,
yeah.
And hey, let's talk about, before you go, right about what happened in Parliament yesterday. Speaking of Simon Bridges, tensions in Parliament boiled over in the afternoon when Simon Bridges, the opposition leader, was booted out of question time for criticising the conduct of the Speaker. Well, this is only a couple of days after they announced this inquiry into bullying.
Yeah. Exactly. And look, this is very serious, but it's serious.
Oh, sorry, I should add, and then that prompted most of the National Party to walk out.
Yeah. No, this is serious, but it's serious on many accounts. The first one is, on his good days, Trevor Mallard can be a really good speaker. But he does actually seem to have a softer, it is fairly palpable, a softer spot for the Prime Minister than he does for the Leader of the Opposition. So that has got him into trouble. And he's also being...
The Prime Minister Labour on the Coalition?
Interesting question. I think it's rather more focused around the Prime Minister rather than the whole of the Coalition.
Yeah. I'm sure he must have, historically, he must have a... Yeah, he must be just naturally protective of her now because she's a friend and a colleague and,
Well, all speakers theoretically have that problem because they come from the governing party. And the degree to which they can set that aside, you know, is a bit of a challenge. The other thing he's got going, though, is this really sort of childish response of taking questions off opposition MPs, that, you know, questions are all lined up. If he feels that there's been some bad behaviour, I feel that's a bit childish.
Yeah.
So he's got some things to get on top of and be the good speaker he can be a lot more of the time.
Yeah,
the second thing is, Bridges completely crossed the line yesterday because his comment that got him thrown out was, here comes the protector. And that's what he might feel.
Meaning that the speaker, Trevor Mallard, was going to put the walls up around what the Prime Minister was saying. Yeah.
And then Brownlee, who usually judge these things better.
Is he still there? God.
He stepped over the line too. So he went out. But the fact that some 50 MPs went out, leaving only the six, I think it was, who had questions to ask, is...
It's like a union walkout. It's like a bunch of coal miners or something like that. That's very Labour.
It's grandstanding on the part of the National Party. And I think they're just far too arrogant that they've got a large group of MPs and party to party, but not party to coalition. They're on equal standing in the public opinion polls. So I think they need to watch themselves very carefully because there will be some hardcore members that say, oh, good, go on you, Simon, fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to say, they were cool as doing that yesterday. I bet they were looking at each other as they walked out.
They've got to win over more than those people if they want to form a government at some point. They're behaving badly, and the bullying issues that are coming up about Parliament generally, it's not just about
Sorry, I should have been.
These are all part.
So it's not just about Maggie Barry, did you say?
But it's not just about Maggie Barry. There's other cases too. But it's a tough place. There is a culture.
It's got small lifts. The lifts are too small.
The lifts are too small.
That's the thing that got me. Have you been in the lifts and the Beehive?
Oh, the lift.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought you said the lifts. As in
No. The lift. The elevators.
MPs enough. Okay, sorry. No, the lifts. Well, that's a really interesting question. That could make people feel kind of caged and ferocious, I suppose. So when they pile out of the lift?
I've just been in them. They feel creepy and small.
Oh dear, oh dear. Well, look, my response might just be me being too big. My response to that is walk up the stairs. It's really fit and energizing for you, and so you bounce into the chamber like a box of birds, ready to take on anybody except the speaker.
All right, Rod, you great big beamy ray of sunshine. I'm a sort of person. Before you go, I'm a sort of person who. If people are going to take the piss out of me, right, I'll go, I don't really like it. But if they do it well, then I'll give them credit. And just what we were talking about there, someone's written, yeah, Brownlee's still there. They're going to have to knock the wall down the Beehive over Christmas to get him out. And then someone, because that's when I, because, you know, you mentioned Jerry Brownlee, and I said, is he still there? And then a very astute BFM listener comes in with a really well-timed and, yes, a touche comment to me saying, is he still there? Bit rich.
maybe
reflecting on my rather long tenure here at 95 BFM.
But you keep coming back, you see. So that's different from a long tenure. That's kind of loyalty or something. But the fact that the listener is still listening enough to send that email means you're in with half a chance.
Thank you, Rod. Hey, cheers. Thank you very much. Will we speak to you before Christmas?
I hope so.
Yeah, we'll make a point of doing that.
Well, if not, have a fantastic Christmas, if we don't, and a wonderful summer holidays and all that kind of stuff.
Have a cool Yule.
Yeah, will do.
Thanks, buddy. Thank you.
See you. Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.